book club's guide.
So this is this like a Galaxy's Guide to the Guide?
No. It's a horror story, actually. It's a horror.
I read it, Elise, my wife read it, and Elise read it around the same time.
Yeah.
And then I read it.
Yeah.
Did you like it?
Yeah, I loved it.
I will tell you, I told Elise, hey, I'm reading this book. And she spoiled, like, everything in it. It's like, oh, have you gotten to this part yet? I'm like, no, I haven't.
I was vague.
All right, welcome back.
Yeah, here we are.
To the Beyond Sunday podcast. We're exploring how to take our faith beyond Sunday morning. This is Patrick Nazaroff with me, as always, Pastor David Dowser.
How are we doing, Patrick?
And Elise McCarter.
Still here. Still pretty successful.
Yes, we're getting there.
I love that tagline. It's just so...
You got to keep it.
Yeah, sure. I mean, now it's like a thing.
You just didn't like a thing, like, we're all temporarily embarrassed millionaires. That we all think we're going to be rich one day, but we're not quite there yet.
I'm well aware that I'm never going to be
rich.
Do you think you're going to be rich someday? Because
I'm counting on my wife.
There you go.
Ride those coattails.
Come on, honey.
Me, by my own effort. Right. I know. But lottery, maybe.
Sure. Okay.
There's options.
Yes.
I feel like a key component to winning the lottery is playing, which is where my failure begins.
Usually when we're up to, like, who the 400 million or whatever, I'll buy a ticket.
Yeah.
I feel like
I always sometimes forget to check those numbers.
Good.
Because I'm just assuming he probably didn't win anyway.
I feel like you're losing money if you don't play at that point, you know?
Yeah. No,
400
that's,
million.
That's not how
you're
that
not winning.
Even though if it's like 20 million or whatever, that's still a life-altering amount of money.
Yeah. Right. So like, it's not, I take a million, honestly. Yes. Yeah.
So it's not...
I'm not picky, right? Million, 500,000, that's fine.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not... I'm not difficult to please here.
I'll even pay taxes on the $500,000 you give me. That's fine. Yeah.
Listeners, there you go. Just give us a cool mil each, and we're good.
Yep.
That's right.
Yep.
Support Beyond Sunday in perpetuity.
Right. What if we did get some like end of life gifts for the pod?
For the pod?
Yeah.
We can have a GoFundMe.
Yeah.
No, we cannot. We cannot have a GoFundMe for this.
All right. About
well, today on the podcast, we are talking all about justice.
Okay.
Yes.
It starts with giving the podcast one. No, wait, that's not.
Yeah.
True justice.
Sorry, true justice. Okay.
Yeah, so spoiler alert for our main story. Tim Keller, he's a Presbyterian pastor in New York City.
Yeah.
Has written a long piece, 24-page long article for his website, all about biblical justice.
Sure.
And a critique of secular justice.
Now, your pages seem to be printed in a strange fashion. Is it 24 pages printed in that weird way, or is it 24 pages if I print it out like a sane person?
Well,
that's called landscape.
Yes.
That's the word I was looking for, landscape.
Yeah, but so the visual for our podcast listeners. Yeah, printed in landscape
hamburgers,
mode.
Hamburgers, not hot dogs.
Portrait mode. Yes. I don't know how I did this.
Okay.
But it is. Mm-hmm. I mean, I assume, you know, it would probably be the same amount of words, regardless of its landscape. Or
I'm not saying the number of words changes. This, you know, perception.
Just the usability, perhaps. Yeah.
But before we get there,
we've
got some news.
Okay.
Also,
about justice?
About justice.
All right. Ooh. Look at us being topical and thematic.
Yeah. So in Lincoln, Nebraska, Anders Christensen is going to present.
Anders what?
Christensen.
This is like Swedish Chef from the Muppets.
Anders
Hamburger Christensen.
His name is Anders too, so it's
Anders,
So he is coming to the city council meeting to talk about justice. I'm going to play his opening speech here.
Let's see what he says.
Yes.
So I won't take up too much of your time here. My name is Anders Christensen. I live at 12th.
That's how it's pronounced.
Christensen. Yeah.
Lincoln has the opportunity to be a social leader in this country. We have been casually ignoring a problem that has gotten so out of control that our children are throwing around names and words without even understanding their true meaning and treating things as though they're normal. I go into nice family restaurants and I see people throwing this name around and pretending as though everything is just fine. I'm talking about boneless chicken wings.
I will pause there.
Boneless chicken wings.
Anders has got a campaign, and it's against boneless chicken wings.
I've got to ask the question that I already regret asking. Is this a real thing, or is this like a dude doing like a, I don't know, sketch comedy joke on Lincoln, Nebraska? Like, is this somebody trying to get their thing, or is this guy really like, boneless chicken wings are...
I will give you a spoiler.
Yeah.
At the end of this video, which is 2 minutes long, It is revealed that one of the city council members says, by the way, that's my son.
Proud moment.
Excellent.
So Ander is against a boneless chicken wing.
Is he against the boneless chicken wing, or is he against the name boneless chicken wing?
So, yeah, he, like, just call it something he says else. It's not a chicken wing. That's his, meat from the in the boneless chicken wing is not from a chicken wing. It's just from the chicken.
Yeah, it's just ground chicken meat. Yeah.
Yes. So it's just chicken tenders, which are already boneless, is what he would say.
It's cut up chicken tenders.
Yes.
So they should be called like chicken bites or something like that.
Yeah, he does give some options there. So let me ask you this though: if you were to go to a wing restaurant, a wing stop, Buffalo Wild Wings, you know what I'm talking about.
I do.
Would you get boneless wings or bone-in wings?
Bone-in every time.
Boneless.
I also would get a bone-in wing.
Yeah, bone-in.
That's why you're there.
Yeah.
You can go to McDonald's and get chicken nuggets, whatever you want.
For sure. Now, I mean, granted, like, yeah, you get the sauce and everything like that, but usually the boneless wing has way more breading than I want, and I want the chicken wing. I want the wing with the bone and the sauce and the,
It's an experience. It's supposed to be messy, hands-on. Yeah. That's what it's supposed to be.
Puts me in touch with my Neanderthal side that, once upon a time, ate this raw meat right off of
you can bond over this? Yes.
No. I want you to understand that you're wrong, but it's fine.
All right, we're going to get some wings in the podcast. We're just going to be eating throughout the rest of the podcast here.
It's going to be delicious.
Yeah. Which everybody would want to hear, right? People just eating. Yeah.
Love that. That's quality podcast.
Let me ask you too. What flavor wing are you most drawn to?
Mm. Well, it really depends on where you are. Okay. Because there are so many varieties.
Okay. Well, you just give me one. I
love a standard buffalo. Like a good, straight up standard buffalo sauce. Very good. BW3's or Buffalo Wild Wings also has a garlic parmesan that is solid, on point, very good.
I'm a buffalo
teriyaki.
Yeah. Interesting. Buffalo or lemon pepper. Those are the two that I would get.
So I'm now wondering, because you said you like the teriyaki. Mm-hmm. My wife also likes the teriyaki.
Okay.
So maybe people that like teriyaki prefer boneless wings.
My wife would also only go boneless.
Would she go teriyaki?
No, she would go barbecue.
Oh, really? What's the point?
I love barbecue.
So Andrew's going to continue here. I don't go to order boneless tacos. I don't go to order boneless club sandwiches.
Uh-huh. Though I do want those all to be boneless. Yeah. Let's just be clear. I don't want bone-in tacos.
Can we get an addendum to Anders' speech?
We need to teach our children that the wing of a chicken is from a chicken and it's delicious. So he does offer.
I like that.
He does offer some names of a buffalo chicken wing, a boneless buffalo wing that you could call it instead.
All right,
so you could call it buffalo style chicken tenders.
Sure.
Wet tenders.
Nope.
Gross.
Nope. Saucy nugs.
I do kind of like that one.
Yeah, that's fun. I would say it.
Or trash.
I like some trash with buffalo sauce.
I like saucy nugs. I think that's the next one. It's fun.
I'd go to an Applebee's and order some saucy nugs.
You're going to Applebee's?
I don't know. I'm just thinking of a place that would have them. I don't know.
It's Corona time. You're like, I'm risking getting Corona for Applebee's?
I'm not going to Applebee's now. I'm saying in general, in a world in which we went to restaurants.
Oh, I'll get you an Applebee's gift card for your birthday.
Are there even Applebee's around here?
Our GoFundMe is one for $1 million for Elise and I, and $1 million in Applebee's gift cards for Pastor David.
Perhaps some merch.
I do not want.
Maybe a franchise. You could own your own.
Is Applebee's really that much worse than BW3's? I mean, where is
I think,
what is BW3's?
That's Buffalo Wild Wings.
Yes.
Oh, excuse me.
Yeah.
Originally, it was Buffalo Wild Wings and WAC. Right. I don't remember what the WAC stands for, but so it was BW3's, and now it's just Buffalo Wild Wings.
Sure.
Or B-dubs.
Ander concludes, we can take these steps and show the country where we stand and that we understand that we've been living a lie for far too long. We know it because we feel it in our bones.
There you go.
Yeah.
So, it's pretty great.
He brought it home at the end.
Yeah, that's a good conclusion. That's good.
And then he gets claimed as the child of one of the council members. That's
That's my son. Roy Christensen.
Right. They're ethically obligated to admit their conflict of interest in this picture.
Maybe he has to recuse himself for the vote.
I don't want to have anything to do with this, so that's my son. I'm out.
Can you think of any other foods that are misnamed or that would suggest something and what you get is something different?
So I would say, like, I've heard this story about a chef who served his daughter real chicken fingers because she ordered chicken fingers for her birthday, and chicken fingers are not the fingers of a chicken. The fingers of a chicken are, like, chicken talons, right?
Yes. Sure.
And so because you can get those in, like, Asia and other countries and things like that. And so he cooked some of those for her to show her what chicken fingers really were. Chicken feet. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. It's not the same.
That's what a way to traumatize your kid.
I know. Yeah.
You know, her and her friends when they're like over for this thing. Other misleading foods. I don't know.
For me, it's one that the food has nothing to do with what it's called. And that would be sweetbreads.
Ooh, true.
Yeah.
Because you hear sweetbreads, I'm like, ooh, that sounds pretty good. I need sweetbread.
Yeah.
You know,
Rocky Mountain oysters would be another one that fits right in that category.
Yeah. Just in case you don't know, sweetbreads is like the glands of like a lamb. You know, like it's and it's not good. Like,
have you eaten it?
No, yeah, I don't need to.
He just knows.
Yeah. I know from the cooking shows I've watched, most of them are like, it's really hard to make people want to eat this.
Well, for good reason. Yes. I mean,
yeah.
So Rocky Mountain oysters. Yeah. Maybe, you know, you can Google that if you'd like.
Yeah, we don't need to go into what those are. Let's just say oysters don't live in the Rocky Mountains. We'll just say that.
Grape nuts cereal.
Neither grapes nor nuts.
Let's see, skim milk.
The McRib from McDonald's.
That's the McRib. That's true. It's in a rib shape, but it is boneless.
Yeah. So it's boneless.
Boneless rib.
Yeah. Wait a second.
All right. So if you'd like to join Andrew's campaign, he has a Twitter there. Let me get that up here for you guys. Or you can email him, saucynugsforpresident@gmail.com.
Saucynugsforpresident.
You know, maybe he's thrown his hat in the ring.
No, I know. Party. Yeah. I appreciate that. Yeah.
I do support this cause. I do think they should be renamed to something else. I like Saucy Nugs.
Are you going to vote for him for president? You're going to vote for Saucy Nugs?
You know, if he's on the ballot, you know, I'd think about it. I'd like to look at his other propositions here.
Yeah, you want to know
I'm
what
his stance is. I'm not a one-issue voter, so... Yeah. Or maybe, you know, this needs to be brought up in the debate to President Trump and Joe Biden here.
I think this
this
is more of a vice presidential debate kind of topic, you know, but...
Okay, I'd like to see what Mike Pence
and Kamala Harris, I want to hear what they have to say about this. Yeah,
I am curious.
Where do you stand on saucy nugs, Mr. Pence?
I feel like he wouldn't know what to do with his hands. I
don't know what to do with my hands, so I can't blame him for that.
All right, so now our main story here.
Right.
About justice.
For chicken nuggets.
A different kind of justice here. All right, so this is, again, from Tim Keller, Presbyterian pastor, also a fairly conservative, theologically evangelical guy. I do enjoy a lot of his teachings and writings, but I would certainly disagree with him on many things.
Sure.
He also recently got diagnosed with cancer.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Prayers go out to Tim Keller. Yeah, so he starts off asking, why do we need to talk about justice?
Right.
And I think that this is important. Justice has been thrown around quite often in our social media spheres, in our nation.
Yeah.
When we do get to our presidential and vice president debates, issues of justice will come up in those debates.
Sure.
About what should we do to provide a more just society and what are the steps that would take to get there.
Mm-hmm.
But what's hard about that statement of why we are concerned about justice is all of us have different feelings or views of what justice even is.
Yeah.
And so when one group says we need justice for this atrocity committed in our country, we can't agree what that justice is, much less how it should be enacted.
Yeah.
So if we as an American society cannot figure this out with one another, it's useless to apply this to the global community.
Sure.
So for the United States to look at issues in China or the Middle East and say there's issues of justice over there that need to be resolved, and we're like, well, we don't even know here how to resolve issues of justice. So he is going to come at this from a way of saying the best vision of justice is actually going to be presented in the Bible. So biblical justice
from a Christian perspective.
And he's a Christian. Right.
Yeah.
So,
I mean,
we're all biased.
Right. Let's just own that up front, right? Yeah. From the Christian perspective.
We don't
best
hate
way
it.
To come into justice is from the biblical perspective.
And so I would agree, but I'm also a Christian. So hard to separate those two things. And he also is going to call out the church a little bit here. So not only as our culture at large can't agree on justice, our churches can't agree on justice.
True.
And largely churches have kind of not addressed this idea of biblical justice in a community or a nation well, which leads to kind of, he will identify as kind of two problems.
Okay, what do we got?
One, believers do not see justice as part of their calling as a believer of Jesus. Mm. So they do not see that as part of their faith life, that justice is a part of that.
Okay.
Are you with me that one?
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. Yeah.
And two, that people who are desire and seek justice, if they don't find it in the church, they're looking to government or social movements for justice instead of relying on what the Bible has to say about justice, because they don't know.
Yeah.
So both those things, like, one, we don't see it as part of our calling as Christians to establish justice for our communities, and two, when we desire it and we don't hear it in church, we've got to go somewhere else to get it.
Yeah.
And he will say, and it's going to be a lesser version of that justice.
Yeah. So you all come at this from a slightly different perspective because you're not ordained as clergy. So would you agree mm-hmm. with this assessment that you, that by and large, and we're going to speak in broad brush terms here, but by and large, Christians don't see justice as part of their calling? Because it's specifically a part of my ordination vows and of my letter of a call and of, like, the constitution, like, in, of the ELCA that says these are the things that pastors mm-hmm. are going to do, and one of them is advocate for justice and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So it's clearly a part of my role, but how do you all come to that as people of faith?
I think it depends on how you're defining not justice so much as, like, seeking justice as a part of your faith. Mm. Because I think so many of us, I will say, view it as somebody else's job. Like, it's mm-hmm. an external mm-hmm. force that we have voted into office mm-hmm. or hired, mm-hmm. you know, to enforce justice and seek that. Which I think is a huge mistake. But, I mean, that's my personal opinion, though. Have I always felt that way?
No.
I think, too, in an increasingly politicized world, which I don't think is probably up for debate for us, that the politicalization of everything has gotten to a point, many pastors have done their best, and I think in a well-meaning place, mm-hmm. of kind of towing the line and kind of threading a needle between, like, how do I address current event issues without alienating anybody in my congregation who mm-hmm. has a different political point of view than I? Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes that could lead to kind of a lukewarm response to justice, sure. if that would make sense. That it's not really there to make somebody passionate or angry. It's mm-hmm. just there to kind of say, we've addressed it.
And
I mean, there's certainly churches out there, both liberal and conservative, that take a hardline stance on justice, but then they probably have found people who would disagree with their point of view don't go to their church.
Right.
Yeah. They're preaching essentially to their own choir.
Yeah. I will say to you, I think that we have a tendency to boil justice down to one issue. I think particularly, I'm going to say the evangelical church and culture tends to boil justice to justice for the unborn. And that tends to be, like, the platform and the hill to die on versus justice for, you know, the adults and, mm-hmm. you know, the immigrant mm-hmm. and all that. I don't want to get into every facet, but I think that we do tend to boil it down to one thing, I think, mostly because that is the issue that is beat to death, you know, evangelical culture.
Sorry, go ahead.
I agree with that perspective. I think when we turn justice into a political issue, we do often get kind of tunnel vision on that single issue, mm-hmm. right? And so whether that's whether that's pro-life issues, whether that's issues around same-gendered marriage, whether that's issues around immigration, or that when we focus on the politics of it, we miss how a broad spectrum applies to all of this, right? If we're pro-life, we should be pro-life for the child who's not born yet. We should be pro-life for the child who's trying to come to flee from some whatever that's going on in their own country. We should be, you know, pro-life for every human being. And that, I think, gets into somewhat of what the biblical context of justice is about. That the biblical context doesn't divide who justice is for. Justice mm-hmm. is for everybody. But I want to hear what Mr. Keller has to say first before I correct him in my own words. discuss it in my own words.
But so, you know, I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves here, because I think he's going to have a lot to say, and I think we've got a really rich
24 pages of it.
So we skipped ahead now to page 6.
All right.
Moving right along.
He identifies kind of five principles of biblical justice.
Okay.
So here are kind of the main tenets of what it's going to look like, and we're going to take a look at these. We'll spend some time on each one. So the first is community. And the subheading is this, and this just might be a tough pill to swallow for many of us.
Or maybe this might be the one I thought was weird.
You're immediately going to say, like, I disagree. others have a claim on my wealth, so I must give voluntarily.
No, this is not the one I thought was weird. Just kidding. I like that one.
I might disagree.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I think that's a hard pill to swallow in an American capitalist economy.
Absolutely.
Where we say my individual work has earned my individual wealth, and I have the individual right to use my individual wealth however I individually so choose for my individual. Right. I mean, that's that is how we've built this country.
Yep.
Yes.
For better or worse. Yeah. That's the concept.
And it's the, like, bootstraps mentality. Right?
Yeah. And it's to the point of toxicity that, you know, we say I'm an individual to the point that I don't have to be, or I cannot be forced to take actions for the collective good. You know, look at something like opposition to mask regulations, saying that, you know, for the collective good of everyone, we are asking everyone to wear a mask. You can't take away my personal freedoms because I'm an individual, right? It boils down to this, you know, giving freely of your desire not to wear a mask is the same thing as giving freely of your wealth to care for the good of a community.
Yes. So his kind of extrapolation of this, if you look at the book of Proverbs, and he's quoting this Old Testament scholar and saying, like, if you really sum that up into one sentence, what is Proverbs about? The teachings, especially on who are the righteous people in Proverbs. He says, the righteous are willing to disadvantage themselves to advantage the community, while the wicked are willing to disadvantage the community to advantage themselves.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how, in a greater summary, he'll also highlight in the Old Testament, when you were supposed to go out there to collect food or grain or grapes from your field, leave the edges. Those are for the poor.
Let them come and glean the edges of your field.
Yeah. So that is part of that responsibility. Yep. You own the property, but the edges are for the poor. Yep. That's just what it's supposed to look like.
Yep.
Side note right here, I did read an article that gleaning is actually coming back in the U.S. during the pandemic.
People
are starting to do that again. Thought that was pretty cool.
I don't have any big fields along which I can go and glean.
See, yeah, me either. Nothing lives in my yard.
They can have all the weeds.
Right.
And then the ultimate idea is, when it comes to wealth, God owns your wealth.
Mm-hmm.
That is the ultimate thing. And you are just a steward of it. And therefore, God has said the community has some claim to that wealth through these ideas of it's your land, you own it.
Right.
But it actually, the edges are for the poor.
Right.
That's how it's supposed to look.
Yeah.
So
no argument. Love it.
Yeah. But I think, again, this does fly in the face of a capitalistic understanding of the world. So this may be hard for many people to.
Yeah. And I mean, I think you can be a capitalist and agree with this.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think this means you have to go full on communist or socialist or Marxist or whatever. Like, I think you can have a capitalist understanding of, hey, we have a free market, we have the ability for individuals to earn income, and also say, God has given me these gifts. God is still an owner of what I have, and so I have a responsibility to care for the community. Those two things can live in concert, in tension with one another, without being diametrically opposed.
Yeah, and he will conclude this section saying, you acknowledge this claim that the community has claim on my personal wealth and voluntarily be radically generous. And so this does fly in the face of both a capitalistic economy and a socialistic economy.
Yeah. Yeah.
So this is not either of those things.
Yeah.
This is something different.
Yeah.
All right.
So I don't need the ASPCA to put on a sad puppy commercial in order for me to feel like I should care for other people.
Or our puppies.
And that's more about dogs.
You don't usually watch that and be like, you know what? I really should give more money to the homeless.
That's what I usually think of when I do it. Is that not what that's for? I thought the sad puppies were to make me care about the homeless. Yeah. Did I do that wrong? Oh, shucks.
Yeah.
All right. Arms of an angel.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, that's usually it's Sarah McLachlan,
yeah,
right?
It is, yeah.
Tearing up right now.
Yeah.
Number two.
She actually is. I thought it was a joke and I looked over.
Stop it. I can't think about puppies.
All right.
Number two. Equity.
All right.
Everyone must be treated with equality and dignity.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So that's our byline there. What do you think? First initial thoughts?
For it.
Yes.
Pro.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
Does he make the same distinction between, what is it, equality and equity? I think that's the... I've been listening to a podcast about education lately, and I don't remember. What equity is one of the terms, and I don't remember if equality is the other one. But, like, essentially, equality is saying everybody gets the same thing. So you picture three people, tall, medium, and short-heighted person standing next to a fence. And the tall person can see over it. The medium-height person is, like, at the edge of the fence. Mm. And the short person's looking into the fence. And if it was equal, then all of them would stand on, you know, a step, right. And one of them would still be able to see, and the other one would still be too short to see. But if it was equity, then the tallest person wouldn't have a step at all, and the shortest person would have a big enough step so that all of their heads are at the same level, and they can all see over the... Is that kind of what he's getting at with this idea of equity?
I don't think Tim Keller goes into that
We do not have that image.
Did you like that visual image of me describing that on the podcast?
Yeah. Love it. I don't think that Tim goes there.
Okay, that's not...
He's got other stuff going on.
Fine.
Yeah.
So, we can
this is going to do some... And I'll say this, a lot of his ideas about biblical justice are going to come from the Old Testament.
The head short people in the Old Testament. This image still works.
He's New Testament, so it's no problem. Yeah. So, and I think that makes sense because that is Israel as a nation state,
sure.
How God is operating for them,
okay.
Has maybe a greater understanding than what the New Testament is trying to accomplish and maybe teach us. All right, so he's going to quote, you have to have the same law for the foreigner as the native-born, which is in Leviticus. In Isaiah, those who speak with equity are supposed to keep their hands from accepting bribes.
Mm.
And he's going to take this, and I think this is right, like a justice system where if you are wealthy, it works different for you than if you are poor is not an equal society.
Sure.
And I think we can probably say in America, that's true.
Yeah.
You know, we have a justice system that has two levels of justice. If you are wealthy or famous, it works differently than if you are poor or, you know, then it does not work as well.
Yeah.
You think of all the prisoners in our county and local jails or state jails here in Texas that are been imprisoned for marijuana possession. Those are poor people.
Yeah.
It's not rich guys that go to jail for marijuana.
Yeah.
That's just not going to happen.
Or for drunk driving or for domestic violence. Or I mean, you can, you know, when you can afford a good lawyer, you can get out of a lot.
Sure. Yeah.
And everybody has a right to attorney, and we provide a public defender or whatever, but, you know, that's not the same as being able to pay for your own very talented lawyer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Versus a public attorney that has 30 minutes within 2 weeks to meet with you and go over your case, and then that's it. And that's all you got.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very different. So, and it also is going to speak to unfair wages, unjust scales, things like that. So cutting corners to provide an inferior product to make more money is not just. I mean, this is what he's going to land on here. Like, that is not a just point of view. So, in our world. All right, so let's go on to number three. Corporate responsibility.
Okay.
All right. I am sometimes responsible for and involved in other people's sins.
Yep. So corporate, not like a corporation, but corporate like...
Yeah.
Yes.
Corporate. I'm making a gathering motion with my arms.
This translates well. All of us.
Yeah. Yes. Corporate as in all of us are involved.
Like at the beginning of worship, we do a corporate confession of forgiveness.
Correct.
Not because we are... confessing for corporations, but we are all confessing together.
You know, some corporations may need to confess.
Yeah. Maybe true, but that's not what we're doing in worship.
For their boneless wings options.
We confess to you, O Lord, the sins of our chicken wings.
All right, so this is going to be, there are times in the Old Testament in Scripture where God holds the nation of Israel responsible for the king's sins.
Yeah.
Or the family is responsible for the individual's sins. Right. So there are definitely parts of the world that have this built into their own social understanding of how things work. So in like Eastern cultures, like sense of like, you'll bring dishonor on your family. Like if you just watched the new Mulan movie.
Say you've been watching Mulan. Yeah.
Like that has an idea of one person's actions affects the family's social standard.
And potentially the entire empire.
Yes.
Spoiler.
Yes. And so, and one person's honor can affect everyone's honor.
Yep.
So again, and that's more similar to an Old Testament point of view than an American point of view currently.
Yeah, an Old Testament society was definitely built on that sort of honor-shame culture.
Yeah.
And we use the idea of... we still use the word systemic sin to talk about this, right? And so we've talked about that before, I think, on the podcast.
Generational sin.
Yeah, systemic sin, generational sin, where, you know, I I may not be sinning by paying my taxes, but my tax dollars may be used for things that are not in line with God's will for humanity. Yeah. And so, I'm a piece of a systemic sin.
Absolutely. So you're going to expand on this through three things. Corporate responsibility. So in the Old Testament, there's this guy Achan who steals. The family is, his whole family is destroyed.
Yeah.
And he says, maybe the family did not participate in the actual stealing, but they helped Achan become the kind of man who would steal. So that they have responsibility there. Corporate participation. So that means our sinful actions not only shape us, but the people around us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, by the nature of my sin doesn't just affect me. It affects my wife. It affects my children.
Right.
Those things trickle down and have those things. And institutionalize. So this would be a practice like a high interest loan, which is, again, forbidden in the Bible. It comes down very, very heavily against loans with interest.
Yep, with any interest, let alone high interest. Yeah.
Those systems in place in a society are doing kind of evil in communities that it's more, now it's reached the institutional level. Mm-hmm. So it's no longer just a family level, it's no longer an individual level, now it's an institutional level.
Right, which is what Jesus is dealing with with the money changers in the temple in the New Testament. Yeah.
Yeah, so we have this idea. So that's number three. Number four.
Cranking through them.
And this, I think, complements number three, and sometimes they're going to butt up against each other a little bit. Individual responsibility. I am finally responsible for all my sins, but not for all my outcomes.
Finally responsible for all my sins, but not all of my outcomes. Okay. I think I'm with you. But say a little more about this one.
Okay.
Is this the one that threw you for a loop?
No, actually, it's the one before the corporate.
The corporate one,
institutional. Which we can talk about if we want to.
Yeah,
sure. But, we'll go back and we'll talk about that. And then we'll come back to this one. We haven't gotten into it.
You want to go back to institutional?
Yeah. Tell us your questions. Yes.
I just think that, or I guess I should say, my 21st century understanding of this, it's difficult for me to see how judging an individual for community sin is justice at all. You know, like that doesn't really jive to me because you can be an individual that has been born into this. System and have not really caused, you know, whatever injustice is inherent in the system.
Right.
That's a Monty Python quote for
it
you.
It was, yeah. It was nice.
But still to be sort of judged for just existing in a system.
Yeah, that, so from a Christian perspective, we talk about this with the idea of original sin. Right, we're born into a state of sin. Even though your infant, who's minutes old, has not committed a sin, they live within a system that is sinful.
Right,
and so the guilt of the sin is upon them, even though they themselves are not yet sinful. And I think that's a similar thing to what they're getting at here. Like the guilt of the institution is upon everybody who's a part of that institution because everybody continues to work to uphold that institution.
Right,
and it is. I think we'll probably get to this too. I don't know where he's going with this exactly, but justice doesn't necessarily mean that it's blame and punishment for that person, but justice means that we're seeking to change that and to admit our responsibility in that, if that makes sense.
Yeah, so for me, the piece that was missing from this article, and I think when we talk about justice, we have a tendency to leave out mercy because it's not enough just to be radically just. It's we have to also be radically merciful, and to me, that's my understanding of what Jesus was sort of pushing.
Sure, yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, and I believe Mr. Keller would also have a lot to say about mercy. I
mean, he's not in that 24 pages. He didn't. Yeah.
Well, this is.
I'm sure
there's only so many pages.
Yeah. He sounds like a great guy. Yeah.
This could have been a 40-page thing, and then he could have gotten.
I mean, just in fairness to him, this is. But I totally understand that. Like, I think how we pair those two things together matters, especially when you approach this from a Christian point of view.
Yep.
Right.
All right. So I'm going to get into number four because I think this will help. This does help kind of bring those questions of number three into light. How do we reconcile those things? I do, for me, these happen. So first we have to deal with this idea of outcomes. That is, I'm not responsible for every outcome in my life.
Mm-hmm.
Or not fully responsible for every outcome in my life. So, but for example, poverty could be brought on by personal failures, laziness, mismanaged funds.
Yep.
Those things could bring on poverty, but in Scripture, environmental factors, famine, plague, injustice from an unjust king could bring on poverty.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Things you have no control of. You have no no option to choose a different outcome.
Yeah.
This is just something that happened, and here you are.
Okay.
So we're so not...
You're not responsible for all the outcomes.
So we're not completely in control of every life outcome.
Okay.
So, therefore, you would say, just because you're successful doesn't necessarily mean you're smarter, more talented, you work harder than everybody else, and just because you're not doesn't mean you're dumber, lazier, and you don't work harder than everybody else.
Okay, all right.
You know, those two things don't... But then we're also pairing this with the idea of my sin and my personal responsibility for sin. Because the reality of corporate sin, this is what he's saying, does not swallow up individual moral responsibility, nor does individual responsibility disprove the reality of corporate evil. So in an extreme, I'm going to give an extreme example here. So we take slave day America. The reality was the institutionalized sin of slavery was happening in the South.
Yeah.
And if you grew up as a white individual on a plantation, you grew up with slaves as part of your world, and that they were probably mistreated.
Yeah.
I mean, by nature of being slaves, they're mistreated, but they're probably mistreated into...
in other ways as well.
In a way that would be really, really awful from us to vision.
Yeah.
And so you grow up, and then that's the world you grew up in. You're part of that world. You grow up, and you become a slave owner.
Mm-hmm.
You beat and whip your slaves, because that's what you were shown. That's what you were taught. That's the world you grew up in.
And the church supported you.
We can acknowledge the institution of slavery is sinful and that, but you also had a personal responsibility that you are choosing to engage in beating up a slave.
Okay.
So both those things are happening at the same time. Just like we can say in modern cultures, we can say high interest loans is an institutional thing that's bad for humanity.
Yeah.
And you may be a banker or work for a pawn shop or work for a payday loan company that's engaged in those things, and you have a personal responsibility. You can't just say, well, like, well, the system's broken and I'm making whatever I can make out of it. This is the world I grow up in. You have a personal responsibility to change.
Yeah. I value that. I think within the context of our Lutheran liturgy, right, we mentioned that we do a corporate confession and forgiveness. And so it's easy for us to sometimes forget that personal responsibility part. We kind of get in this place where, like, every week we come like, oh yeah, stuff's bad, please God forgive us, and we think, oh, we're good, and we forget about, no, like, part of that is to be thinking about what are the individual components that I bring to this table. You know, what are the ways that I have not acted in accord with what God wants for me and for the people around me this week? And we forget to bring that as the Lutheran perspective. On the other side, I think, you know, there are people who, you know, shout like, hey, you need to have Jesus as your personal savior and you need to come and admit your sin, and we look past all the ways in which there's this greater corporate thing. And so I think both of us have missed the mark. I like that Tim, like, we're old pals. I like that Tim is bringing those together to say, look, both of these are necessary and, yeah, do compete with one another, but also complement one another.
Yeah.
That's helpful.
Yeah. And so finally, number five is advocacy. So we must have special concern for the poor and the marginalized. And so Old Testament, this is going to be a big thing that's going to come up over and over again, is this concern. You might hear it as, like, widows and orphans, things like that, or the foreigner or the alien who resides among you, that those things happen. In Proverbs, it's going to say, like, speak for those who cannot speak for themselves, defend the rights of the poor and needy. So one of the other ones was kind of this equality, which, remember, or equity, which we talked about earlier. This is not flying in the face of that. This is saying, if you're rich, you're powerful, you have those financial means, you don't need somebody to speak on your behalf.
Right.
But if you don't have those means, you do need somebody to speak on your behalf. You do need somebody to come in and help when you're facing a justice system that is unjust and you're powerless. And so this is saying, and the church has that responsibility to do that. So whether that's economics, whether that's through law, whether that's through police, whether that's through schooling, whatever that looks like, the church has a responsibility to have special concern for the poor and needy and address their needs directly. So what do we think? This biblical idea of justice.
I like it. I do want to point out that he does hit really heavily on the Old Testament. And I do think that Jesus sort of adds to that quite a bit. You know, in the New Testament, there's a paradigm shift. And we have more, like, an expansion, I think, of who we're supposed to advocate for one thing, as well as a renewed focus on mercy.
Yeah, I would say.
Yeah. And so I think that some of that is missing from this, like, overview of biblical justice. Not to say that it's bad or that I don't agree with that.
I 100% understand what you're saying.
It leans a little bit legalistic for me.
Sure.
Yeah, I think when we talk about justice, that can definitely happen. Because I think we're still, whether we intend to or not, we're still bringing our modern concepts of justice to the scenario in whatever way we are. I think one thing that's been helpful for me as I've been doing some studying in the Old Testament recently is talking about justice from the perspective that we feel like God is giving us through the Old Testament, right? So not just trying to say, well, what do I interpret as justice, but what is God demonstrating as justice? And God seems to be demonstrating as justice that the land, the earth, has the abundance to provide for everyone's needs.
Mm-hmm.
And when everyone's needs are met, there's a level of justice there. When no one is hungry, when no one is left uncared for, when no one is left unsheltered, when no one is left on the outside looking in, when the needs of all people are met. And that means the very wealthy might have less, but it means that the people who have nothing will have some, right? We can think of where we hear that the low places will be brought up and the high places will be brought down, right? It's not just that the high places will be brought all the way down to the low, it's that the low are coming up and we're meeting in the middle. We're meeting at a median where the earth has the ability to sustain and care for and provide abundance for all. And so in my estimation, as we're reading this, that's God's view of justice. And so how do all of these things drive us towards God's desire for people to experience this justice, which... yeah, still gets caught up for us. Well, justice. Well, how do I get justice for, you know, someone who kills my brother, or how do I get justice for a crime that was committed against me? And that's broader than just this kind of baseline of justice means everyone has the opportunity to have what they need.
Yeah, and I think that's really helpful. I hope if people are listening, they listen to that, because this is bigger than just like justice for a crime.
Right.
This is how do we live in a just society?
Right.
How do we do that? And so, you know, for example, as you mentioned, we as an earth produce enough food for every human being to get 2,000 calories a day. We produce that.
Yeah.
But we don't have that in place because some places, and I can say I'm a part of this, overeat, buy food, throw it away, you know, things like that. And that leaves a scarcity in some places, not even just around the globe, but in my community and in my neighborhood. That the issue is not there's just not enough food to go around. The issue is we're not getting the food to the right people.
Right.
That's a greater issue. And that's an issue of justice.
Yes.
Again, it's not necessarily a crime to order too many boneless buffalo wings. But
maybe it should be.
Maybe it should be. Maybe in Andrew's world.
Judgy.
Maybe in Saucy Nugs for President's right, world. Yeah. But it is an issue of justice that, yes, some are overfed while some are underfed.
Right.
That is an issue.
Yeah.
So we're going to probably stop here just for time's sake. But I will say the back half of this article, he is going to go into, and I highly recommend reading it. Maybe we can put a link on our thing.
Should we come back to it next week?
Yeah, I think let's do come back to this. Because he is going to go into, in the back half of this article, that there are visions of justice that we have of how a just society works here in America. And he is going to argue every one of them fails in comparison to biblical justice.
Okay.
So regardless if you are more conservative to liberal, if you have a greater desire on individualism or collectivism, they're going to fail because they're going to be missing one of those five things. And he's going to definitely say all five of those need to be present in the most just society that you could create.
Okay.
So this may not be next week.
Yeah, but we'll come back
to it. But we're going to come back to it within the next few weeks.
Okay. That sounds great.
All right. Any other thoughts?
No. I like it. Thank you, Mr. Keller. Yeah. Sir.
Get well
doctor?
Soon.
Is he a doctor? Probably.
Probably.
Probably has it, yeah.
Definitely a pastor.
Yeah, Dr. Pastor Keller, sir.
Dr. Pastor Keller, sir. Yeah, we pray that...
Tinker Taylor's Ultra Spy.
There it is.
We pray that he recovers quickly from cancer and that treatment is
effective. Yeah, may God continue to be with you and all that. Yeah. Well, hey, if you liked what you heard today and want to know more about justice, we'll have a link to this article from Tim Keller on our page and with the show notes of this episode. And we hope that you'll share this out with your friends and come back when we do part two of Justice here to talk about how that's going to
lead us into a way of living in our current context. And so you can find this episode and all of the episodes on all the places where you find great podcasts, and we would love it if you took a moment out of your time to rate, review us, all the things, and of course, send us your thoughts at beyondsundaypodcast@gmail.com.
There you go. All right, well, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week with more Beyond Sunday.